This is a download from BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the show. I'm Lee Chui Lin. It's nigh impossible to go through life without an injury, but what we do when faced with one can have real impact on how we heal. Discussing neglected injuries in sports and trauma today is Dr. Harjit Singh, consultant orthopedic surgeon. Welcome to the show, Dr. Harjit. So firstly, what constitutes a neglected injury?
I think to put it simply, whenever you have an injury and you ignore it, or you ignore advice towards treating it in the best way possible, and you then have further changes due to that injury, you can say that the injury has been neglected.
So it's not defined then by an amount of time. It's just any time you ignore an injury.
Yeah, I think the way you need to look at it, it's not only duration, but it's severity and also the consequences of that. So if you neglect something and nothing happens, then people don't come to you. But then there will often be changes due to that injury. And you come because those changes disturbed you even more.
So for the context of today's discussion, we are not talking about things like bangs and scrapes, right? We're talking about fractures, maybe sprains, contusions, things like that?
Yeah, I guess if we narrow it down to that, then that those are the most common stuff that actually happens.
Stats also suggest that it's something more common in the underdeveloped and developing world. Why might this be so?
Okay, I think we have to look at it two-pronged. On one hand, it's probably access to medical care. So often you tend to resort to alternative methods, or you tend to let just things be. The second thing is that when you have access to medical care, then the cost and the ability of the doctor comes into play. So you tend to get inappropriate treatment, or you get no treatment at all, whether it's willful or, you know, you were not aware of it in the first place. Then these kind of things tend to happen in developing nations. So I think it's definitely more common there.
In your experience, have you ever encountered a neglected injury?
Oh, surprisingly, yes, yes.
That's disappointing.
No, I mean, let's not take it that way. You know, often with children, okay, they often have an injury and they complain of pain, and you tend to go to a traditional healer, particularly out of town areas, okay, where these kind of beliefs are very strong. Now, the problem with children is they tend to heal, but they don't heal in an appropriate position. So, you know, you tend to fracture a bone, but it heals off in a bent position. And often as the child grows, there is loss of function. And that's where, you know, we see them and we have to correct that.
So what are some of the key reasons as to why neglected injuries occur? It seems as if it's counterintuitive, right? If you have an injury, you want to treat it.
Okay, now, so often you have a patient coming to you and you actually give them the option for treatment. Say if you have an injury to a joint, okay, you have a ligament tear, or maybe your meniscus, which is the shock absorber within the knee tears, and you tell him that, okay, you need surgery to get this sorted out. You either need to repair it or clean up the joint. Now, you then go on to tell him the risks of surgery and how long it will take to get better. That sometimes scares people away. So they don't get treated. Consequently, they just ignore the problem. The problem brings about other problems and the condition worsens. So that's scenario number one. Scenario number two is that they get injured. They do not realize the severity of injury, and they ignore it. The body tries to repair itself, often imperfectly, and they come with the subsequent problems. So I think there's two ways to look at it. So what I would say is willful neglect. You know there's a problem, but you're not going to do anything about it. And because of that, you have other problems which you cannot then tolerate and you come over. Or you have the other group which never came from the beginning.
And were just not aware that they needed to.
Yeah, it's either they were not aware, or They just didn't want to.
Wishful thinking, yeah. I want to talk a little bit about group two. So when do you know that it's pain that will need professional care? Because that, I think, is an interesting line for those of us at home, because we hurt ourselves and we just go, we say it's a sprain even though we don't know what a sprain is. We say we twisted our ankle even though we don't know what that means. And then we just decide to, I don't know, elevate it.
I think it's pretty simple. The bad ones, everybody will come over. You have an accident and you break your thigh bone. You can't walk. Everything looks so odd. You will immediately come to the emergency room. It's the other ones, the small knocks, the twists coming down the stairs, you know, playing futsal, which you possibly feel is going to go off on its own. But I think the thing would be that if you have swelling which scares you around the area, okay, you can't really put weight or move the part comfortably, then I think you probably need to get checked up. Often, if you have a bit of pain, but you could probably walk on the part if it's the knee or ankle, and if it's the upper limb, you can move it, although a little bit uncomfortably, and you take some medication, put an ice pack, and it goes off within, you know, it gets better dramatically over 24 hours, then I think you're fine. If it still lingers on, it's not getting better after about 24 hours, or it's getting, you know, even swelled up even more, then you probably need professional help.
And the duration of that 24 hours is a pretty good gauge?
Yeah. Normally, okay, they say 24 to 48, but I tend to keep it shorter. You know, if you're going to get better, the swelling and pain should come down within the 16, 24 hours. If it's not, just come over. Because nowadays, at least in the Klang Valley, medical care is so accessible.
And mostly available at almost all hours.
Yeah.
The body has an immense ability to self-heal, but perhaps we rely on it a little bit too much. What are the limits of that ability?
Okay, I think the limits change as we age. Okay, if you have an injury in a child, now even in training, we have been taught and trained that these are the limits to a body's ability to heal. That means if you have a fractured bone, angulated, looking very odd, and it's within this amount of degree, we know that based on the age, the body can heal it back perfect. Now, so we do not disturb those kind of injuries. We just support the injury and allow the body to heal. Now, it's only when it's beyond that we correct it. So the first factor would be the age. Now, the second factor would be the other medical issues that the patient might have. He might be a diabetic, which tends to increase chances of an infection or slow down healing. If you're a smoker, you tend to have a slower level of healing. So these are the other things that we need to consider. The third thing is the severity of the injury and how close it is, whether it involves the joint, where treatment has to get things right from the beginning, or further on where there is more of a leeway. So it depends. But I think the most important one is always the age. Children, they have a superb capability to heal. And often, you know, we used to joke around saying that there are times that the treatment makes them worse than getting them better. But take it with a pinch of salt. When in doubt, please see the doctor.
Within 24 hours. What are some measures that one could take that may make the pain deceptively go away, so to speak, where, you know, it seems to be better, but in truth, you haven't really improved?
Okay, I've noticed that we tend to pop a lot of pain meds easily. Some are available over the counter. Some are supposed to be prescribed but are easily available at the pharmacy in Malaysia. Okay, so we tend to take those medications and we are lulled into the sense that we are improving. Okay, that's one. Second thing is you would meet your neighbor or another friend who plays the same game and he says, "No, I had something like this. And I just wore this support or this brace and I'm better."
Or I put some papaya leaf on it, all sorts of stuff happens.
Exactly. And the third thing is that you will self-select the kind of activity that doesn't cause you pain. Okay, if you're mindful that you are doing that and the problem is actually still there, then it's fine. But some people, they tend to forget and they say, no, I'm better, but it's because they're just not using the part well.
Something else that's pretty, I would guess, pretty common in our country, bone setters in a traditional setting. They're fairly popular options for people looking to deal with their injuries. What's your take on this? Especially if it's the first line of attack, so to speak.
Okay, the way I look at it is that I'm from Johor. Oh, it's very, very popular there. So much so that we used to always call ourselves Bomo Tulang as a joke. Now, the problem being is that I don't think often, unless it's a very mild crack, fracture or something, that they splint it with whatever wooden pieces that they use and the patient gets better. The problem is you don't have x-rays. Everything is done, based on non-scientific manners. So I've never advocated it as a first line. Although if you just have a small sprain and you get a massage, you tend to feel better. Now, I do allow it in one circumstances, in the sense that if you have a fracture and you've been casted, we always tell the patient that, okay, upon removal of this cast for your injury, you're going to feel a bit stiff. Okay, and after that, we prescribe physiotherapy. Most of the time, sometimes, they would have the inconvenience of coming back to the hospital. So then they resort to a bit of a massage by a traditional masseuse or a healer. I think that is safe. If you have already seen someone on the conventional medicine side and he said, okay, now this part of the injury has healed and it's this stiffness that you need to work out, then it's okay. But not from the word go. The problem being that as you delay your treatment, it becomes very difficult to correct. We can get it done, but your results are never as good.
So I guess the point is, once the injury has been properly healed or healed as properly as it's going to get, then it's not as bad.
Okay, the way I look at it is that when you have a problem, make sure it's not something dangerous and something that requires at once care. You get that part sorted out. And once that's the case, you have the option of, okay, now I know that this is what the medical doctor is going to do, but he has told me these alternatives of taking it easy and getting a massage, and then I want to go and do it here. So you are then an informed patient, and an informed patient makes his own decisions.
I'm speaking today to Dr. Harjit Singh, consultant orthopedic surgeon. We are discussing neglected injuries in sports and trauma. Coming up, we find out what different types of injuries are most common in both sporting terms as well as trauma on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
This is a download from BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Good afternoon. You're listening to The Bigger Picture. I'm Lee Chui Lin. With me today, Dr. Harjit Singh, consultant orthopedic surgeon. We are discussing neglected injuries in sports and trauma. Dr. Harjit, what are the different types of injuries that are most common in sport as well as in traumatic situations?
Okay. We'll start with sport. I think the most the two target joints would probably be the knee and the ankle for the lower limb, and probably the shoulder for the upper limb. Now, the thing about, we play a lot of outdoor games, synthetic surfaces, such as futsal, football, and we tend to injure probably the meniscus of the knee, the ligament of the knee, which we know rested over a period of time, okay, tends to make it better. Although the meniscus tears often need surgery. Now, if we neglect it, often healing is incomplete or it doesn't heal at all. But that part is still acceptable to some patients. Although if you have a meniscus tear, it tends to change the way the joint loads with weight and activity. Now, you tend to then erode the cartilage further. So if you neglect it, it's not going to remain as a tear of your meniscus. It's also going to involve the cartilage, and that's a bigger problem. So that's looking at the knee. That's the most common one. The second one is the ankle. Now, we often get ankle sprains, whether in sport, with high heels,
just walking somewhere,
uneven grounds, because in Kuala Lumpur, potholes develop overnight, right? So when you twist it, it's a very common kind of injury and you tend to brush it off, take a bit of meds. But we know now that even simple ankle sprains require a period of 6 weeks to heal. Now, you don't do anything. About 2 weeks, you still feel good. You don't feel perfect, but you feel good. But the ligament then tends to heal in a lengthened position, which makes you prone to repeated sprains. So the take-home message is you get it once, you take care of it well, and you never have a problem again. It is when you neglect it. Now, you are prone to more injuries. You are then also prone to damage other parts of the joint.
Yeah, there's always a knock-on effect,
yeah,
isn't there?
I think it's the knock-on effect which is the killer in a neglected injury. If you already saw a doctor and he tells you this is what you need and you say, no, I don't want to go for it, the doctor will then probably tell you these are the things you cannot do because you go play again or, you know, you twist it again, you do something funny, you are going to make the injury worse. Okay, then he will tell you, okay, I allow you to swim, I allow you to possibly cycle, and that's there. Okay, now, you initially will follow it, then you will probably disregard it.
Because you feel better.
Yeah, because you feel better and it just worsens. Because your body is trying to heal it, but maybe it needs a little bit more help. So you tend to settle down a bit, but the problem doesn't go away. Now, over months or years, you tend to have the knock-on effect. And that's where you come in and the doctor will tell you, you know, now you have these added problems.
What is, and this is a question that we tend to ask you all the time, because chronic injury, or rather chronic pain and acute pain, they're different things. And I think they cause different reactions in the people experiencing them as well. So what is the difference between a neglected chronic injury or pain as opposed to acute injury and pain?
Yeah, okay. I think most acute injuries heal. Okay, they don't go on to a chronic injury. Of course, particularly in children, they will heal. As we get older, the quality of the tendon or the tissue is also not as good as it was before, particularly because we have used it a lot, okay, or we do not keep it in proper shape. Now, when you have an injury in those circumstances, not treated well, the body will try to heal it, often incompletely. And as we get back to the activity, it gets injured again. So then it moves on from something which is just a single instant issue to something which lingers on. And that is the one that causes a chronic, dull, irritating pain, which troubles you more and more until you get treatment. The problem being that once it's neglected, you tend to take a longer time to be able to get the patient back. You probably sometimes have to resort to surgery, have to resort to injections, which you never would have considered if they had come in from the word go. So I think that's the differences.
Joints like elbows and knees, they're in constant usage, our knees especially. And so how then do we deal with neglected injuries that occur in those particular joints?
Yeah, okay. The patients who have injuries on the lower limb, they tend to come a little earlier because it is a part that it's weight bearing. You as long as you're moving, you're using them, so they tend to come early. The ones who are a little bit delayed are probably the elbows, where, you know, it's not weight bearing, or
I can swap to my other arm.
Yeah, you try to compensate, or you limit yourself to certain movements which don't cause you the pain. In the shoulder, most problems cause worsening pain if you lift it above 90 degrees. That means you try overhead movements. So what people do is that they avoid those kind of movements. But if your job description or your daily activities involve those movements, you tend to come early. So it's always a give and take. Like when I say willful neglect is a person knowing that he possibly has a problem, but self-treating himself by avoiding motion or movement or activities which cause his problem.
All right, so let's get down to the science of the thing. What is the process of proper bone healing? I think many of us think we understand the idea of bones knitting back together and so on, but what is the process of it?
Okay, not to be too scientific also. Okay, now the thing is, when a bone breaks or a ligament heals, there's bleeding, okay? The bleeding will cause irritation and inflammation. So the body will be stimulated to send certain cells to come over there and try and clean up the dead tissue. Okay, now after cleaning up the dead tissue, there will be other cells coming in to try and build new tissue. Okay, so for the bone, there are two groups of cells. The osteoblasts, the ones that come and build bone, and the other one remove bone. Okay, so debris is removed, new bone is built, but initially it is built in a haphazard manner, just to try and splint the area which is injured. With time and weight and function, the body will try and distribute the stresses to the original state. So you have a process. We also have time durations for all this. For the upper limb in children, generally 3 weeks they are sorted.
Children adults, really are.
Yeah, superb. You know, if you have a birth fracture of, say, the collarbone, within a week, they are already very much okay. Now, for the adults, you tend to double up the duration. Okay, so that's like roughly we know how long it takes. So anything that is beyond that, we try to look for reasons which is delaying it. That means you call that union or uniting bone is delayed. Now, if it doesn't happen at all, then it's non-union. It doesn't unite. Then you have to find out whether there is a problem with that part itself or whether the patient itself has faulty ability to heal. So it's a combination of things.
What are the factors then that determine a successful bone healing process?
Okay, you have factors from the patient itself. Okay, so if you are a non-smoker, you don't have any other healing issues.
A non-smoking, non-diabetic, yeah, non-hypertensive.
I think hypertension, no.
Okay.
Non-smoking, non-diabetic.
Person of normal weight.
Person of normal weight. Okay, and the treatment of the part has been appropriate. That means the injured part has been allowed to rest. There's not much movement enabling early healing to occur. As healing advances, we tend to move the part because we want the bone then to remodel. So we start putting stress on the bone as we feel it can take that amount of stress. So it has to be the patient, it has to be the method of treatment, and it has to be the doctor all acting in concert. They have to be in the same page. If not, then it tends to break down somewhere.
And then it gets delayed.
Yeah, then it gets delayed. The problem is, once it gets delayed, to bring it back to a normal process would take other methods, like you tend to get casted longer. So if you get casted longer, then the stiffness that you get is worse. So, you know, it's one thing leads to another and it just goes downhill. It's like a vicious cycle.
So I guess, you know, we haven't gotten to the end yet, but just as a middle of the interview sum up, I guess.
Okay. That's a new one.
Yeah, I know. we're mavericks. I guess it's safe then to say that if you see your doctor promptly,
okay,
if your injury is sorted out, you know, with medical care appropriately, and you follow instructions closely, then you are most likely to have the best possible outcome, as opposed to if something were to break the process down anywhere at any point.
Yes, agreed.
And it would be harder to restore that initial great healing process if it's delayed. Is that also correct?
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay. Going back to the idea of a non-union, which is a very scary word,
Yeah. This
happens when the process of healing gets stalled or there's poor blood flow to the area for whatever reason. What causes this?
Okay. I mentioned just now that for the bone to heal, it should be kept in a position which allows it to heal. So you can do that by doing surgery, putting in a plate or a metal nail, and you can also do it with a cast. Okay. Now, if you don't have any systemic problems, you're a non-smoker and all, you put place this in a good position or you cast them in a good position, they tend to heal over that period of time. Now, if your cast loosens out or you have not placed the plate in a proper position, it cannot do the function that it was supposed to do, like keep the parts not moving. Now, that will delay healing because there is an inappropriate amount of movement when there should be none. And move on, if it is not sorted out, then you tend to not unite. So non-union is not unite. Now, non-union itself, there would be factors due to that area. There are certain areas like the lower part of the shin bone where the blood supply is not good. Okay. Now, if those parts are injured, you can expect a small chance of non-union occurring. If you have problems with your surgery, including infection, okay, which is something that we explain to all patients, then there will be an infective process going on, dying bone, dirty tissue, and the blood supply reduces further and it doesn't heal off. Okay. Now, the other part is that if your cast loosens out, then you can also have non-union. So the problem is identifying what's happening and immediately reversing it. Then you can actually continue the healing process.
So do you ever hit a point in a non-union where it becomes untenable or impossible?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there have been times where you have that and then you still have other options. Like we then tend to graft the bone. That means we take bone marrow or bone tissue from other parts, put it there, hoping to kickstart the process. And, you know, sometimes there are other methods to put pressure against the two parts of the bone, helping it to join. So, but we don't want to go there. We always pray that it just happens yeah. the proper way and that's it. Because once you have non-union, you already have an environment which is not conducive towards healing. And you are going to be fighting a battle on a losing position from the beginning. Then you try to move on to a strength.
So when would an osteotomy be required? Is that the bone graft you were speaking of?
No. Okay, an osteotomy is just breaking the bone. Okay, now if you have someone who has fractured his thigh bone and gone for some traditional treatment or did not have access in a war zone, last time during the Aceh tsunami, there were patients who were sent over 6 months down the line. So the bone has joined up, but it's in a very inappropriate position. He is non-functional, he's bedridden. You will break the bone and realign it back. Okay, one. Second situation, if you have a joint injury and that joint injury causes overloading of one part of the joint, then you do an osteotomy to try and change the way the joint functions so that the pressure is moved off from that part. So those are the situations where we use an osteotomy. But those are options further down the line.
Right.
Yeah. Before we reach that, sometimes just manipulating it helps.
Moving from just bone to muscle, what can happen if one ignores bad muscle strains or contusions?
Yeah, surprisingly, muscle strains and contusions are common injuries. The good thing is most often they are mild. Now, the worst ones, the ones which are moderate or severe, if you ignore them, you then place yourself in a situation where you can get recurrent injury easily. Because once muscle heals, it always heals in a tighter position. It doesn't heal by forming muscle tissue, it heals by forming scar. And scar is actually tight tissue. So if you do not then allow it to heal and rehabilitate yourself to stretch out the scar tissue, it puts a burden on the surrounding muscles and you tend to re-injure yourself. So from something so simple, it can become something which is recurrent. You have a lot of footballers who come with, you know, hamstring injuries. And, you know, you ask them and they said from teenage when they were starting to play elite soccer, they've already had this and they carry this injury.
Yeah, anybody who's followed the career of Ryan Giggs will be very familiar with the hamstring injury.
And I think Robin Van Persie also having that now.
It's very sad. Manchester United players, yeah.
No, it's okay. As long as they're not Liverpool.
I can't.
Manchester United.
It's unacceptable. So another condition that came up while I was reading about this, and that was quite scary, is myositis ossificans, if I'm getting that right. What exactly is this?
Okay, now, the one which is possibly relevant to this talk would be the one that occurs after injury. Okay. Surprisingly, we have seen this in children, okay, particularly if you go for a traditional line of care. Now, a lot of the traditional bone setters, they rely on massages, okay? And children have this fantastic ability to build bone. So while they are massaging the injured tissue, right, they actually are causing more injury to the part. Okay. So sometimes you have an injury, say on the thigh muscle or the bone, and he keeps on rubbing it down. So the body gets stimulated to form bone within the muscle. So that is what myositis ossificans is essentially in this kind of area. Of course, you do have circumstances where you have a tendency to have inflammation of your muscles and, you know, bone gets deposited, but that's more of a hereditary, non-injury kind of thing. But we have seen a few. Now, once your muscles are tightened, particularly around the joint, you then have a lot of stiffness, you lose the ability to move, and to correct that, it's a big job. I mean, you require so much of physiotherapy. You sometimes require surgery to, you know, release out the muscle. So myositis ossificans, we have seen quite a number in children. But now the incidence is much less.
Right.
Because parents tend to, although they might go to a traditional healer, they always come to us for a second opinion.
And then you can address the problem as quickly as possible.
Yes.
All right. This condition also can be caused in part either by applying heat too quickly to an injury or failing to apply cold therapy promptly. Again, this can be very scary to somebody who has an injury and, you know, you're told by different people, apply heat, apply ice. What immediate actions should I take if I'm dealing with a strained muscle or a muscle contusion?
If you have an injury, the first thing that you do is normally apply ice. Okay. But there are a few caveats to it. You don't apply it directly onto the skin. You will cause an ice burn. The simplest way is you just put some crushed ice in a plastic bag. Wrap it around with this Good Morning tin towels and just put it over there for 20 minutes.
Things that every Malaysian household should have.
So you say Good Morning towel. Ah, eureka. Those kind of tin towels, not the thick ones. You put it over the part, you keep it there 20 minutes. And for the first 24 hours or so, you repeat it every 2 hours, except when you're asleep. So that tends to reduce the pain and also reduce the inflammation. So you reduce the metabolic rate of the injured tissue.
So never heat.
Never heat. Now, the usage of heat is that, you know, some people have chronic back pain. They get up in the morning, they are very stiff. They have been advised to do some stretches. But you have to often warm up the body before doing stretches. So one of the ways to passively warm up is to put a warm pack and then do your stretches. So I think that's one of the areas where you use a warm pack.
And where does something like elevation come into all this?
Okay, now if you look at the role of, acute injury, what you can do on your own, they always say rest, so it's a RISE protocol. Okay, RISE, ICE, we have gone through ICE, which is cryotherapy, compression and elevation. Now elevation, it depends on the part. If it's the ankle, just keep it higher than the hip joint, it's fine. Okay, because elevation allows all the swelling to move down and your lymphatic drainage is also better. Okay, compression, yes, putting some amount of pressure onto the part will help control the swelling. But the thing is, when we say put some compression, people tend to strangulate the part. So don't do that. It's just a bit of firm pressure. It should be comfortable and then you're sorted out.
Okay, and when might a neglected injury result in deformity?
Okay, if you have a fracture and it's beyond what we accept as an ideal position to heal, it will definitely cause a deformity. Now, whether the deformity is just unsightly or whether it causes functional problems, it's left to be seen. But even that, the moment we see, we can tell you, you don't get this treated right, you're not going to be able to rotate, you're not going to be able to lift, those kind of things.
As a surgeon, when you have to perform a surgery to fix a neglected injury, does it affect the outcome and recovery period?
Yes, it does, definitely. One is that the surgery becomes difficult and longer. So we tell the patients, now all the other problems such as infection, getting more stiff, you know, post-surgery, having a longer rehabilitation period comes into play. You know, because even a prolonged surgery increases your chances of infection. So whenever we are dealing with a neglected injury, we always deal with caution in the sense that we try to do our best, but we don't aim for perfect because we don't want to prolong surgery too long, and we try to get them back with advanced rehabilitation.
And finally, what message would you like to leave us with on the subject of neglected injuries? How can we avoid this happening?
Okay, I think your mid-talk sum up says it all. But I'll just add, when you're injured, you don't immediately sometimes require surgery. Okay, often you require rest and a bit of therapy. So never fear seeing the doctor. Okay, probably 20% would require surgery from the word go. Okay, the other 80% don't. So if you get good advice from the word go and you are then treated appropriately and you are confident in the person treating you, then you will never go into willful neglect. You have already got yourself sorted out and you probably would avoid a neglected injury.
And if the pain and swelling doesn't reduce after 24 hours despite the RICE protocol, then it's time to seek help.
Definitely.
Thank you very much, Dr. Harjit. I've been speaking to Dr. Harjit Singh, consultant orthopedic surgeon. We've been discussing neglected injuries in sports and trauma on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.